This is The Record on KUOW. I'm Bill Radke. Thank you for tuning in. If you have found a new apartment in Seattle in the last year or so, you probably ran into the first-in-time law. It said that Seattle landlords were required to rent to the first qualified tenant. This is a first law of its kind in the United States, and yesterday that law was struck down. Here with me to discuss the pros and cons of the law and what we do next are Liz Dupuy and Chris Bennis. Liz is the former executive director of the Tenants Union of Washington State. Chris is legal counsel and former president of the Rental Housing Association of Washington. Welcome to both of you.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming in. Chris, you're a small landlord. What was your main objection to the law?
Well, we had a small building, 6 units, owned by my wife and my 3 kids, and was their college education fund. And when we have applicants come in, we like to meet them, learn about them, see if it's a good fit for them, for us, for the other tenants in the building, for the community. And taking that right away, the ability to manage our property in a way that no other city in the country has ever considered doing, we thought was just frankly, crazy.
What's an example? Give me a scenario where it was important to you to not rent to the first qualified tenant.
Well, the thing that when taking away the discretion of the property owner, what happened is we raised our rental criteria up, and it creates this pecking order where if somebody is the first one to show up and they meet those minimum criteria, you have to rent to them. You could have the second, third, fourth person in line with a more compelling story who says, gee, I make a little less money, but I'm willing to help out in some way around the building, or you just have a better feeling for them, and you can't rent to them.
What would give you a better feeling for someone?
Well, I'll tell you the exact opposite thing. We had a guy come to our building a few years ago who, at that time, you could use criminal background, you know, as a factor in declining their application. He said, I have these criminal convictions, but he told us how he'd become a pastor and turned his life around, and we decided to take a chance on him. Ended up being a great tenant, lived in the building for a couple of years. But when you have these absolute rental criteria that you can't deviate from because there's this locked-in pecking order of who qualifies and who doesn't, you can't give people a break. You can't make exceptions.
Okay. Liz, you heard an example there of Chris wanting to use his leeway to do the right thing. Why did you support this law?
We supported the law at the Tenants Union after numerous calls from tenants saying that landlords were doing the wrong thing. Indeed, landlords would say, yes, we have a unit available. And then a black person, a poor person, a woman, a single mother would show up to look at that apartment. And all of a sudden, that apartment is no longer available. So much so that for the last, five, maybe even more years, we've worked with the Housing Justice Project to look at discrimination in housing based on race, sex, and income. And so when this law came up, this ability to say, great, you have to qualify you have to rent to the first qualified tenant. We said, oh, that's fantastic, because that means that people, landlords, cannot use their implicit biases to be able to say that one tenant is just better than the other for one gut check or another. Yes, Chris is talking about maybe a good situation, but I don't think he's recognizing all of the different situations that can happen to have a landlord implicitly discriminate against a poor person, a young person, a person of color in these situations.
What about that, Chris? Would you acknowledge that this law is getting at the ability of landlords, who all of whom have implicit biases and explicit biases, that this was a tool to prevent discrimination?
What it boils down to is the cure worse than the disease? Yes, there is discrimination. There is unfairness in our society. We do have laws that are protective of discrimination against anything that was just mentioned. I was just talking to somebody yesterday and said, you know, we need education, we need enforcement, we need empowering tenants so they can advocate better for themselves. But to say that a property owner, let's say even somebody not like myself, but who has a duplex, who can't pick the person who lives 4 inches on the other side of their wall, I think the cure is far worse than the disease.
How would you empower tenants to advocate for themselves? So you're saying tenants, you prevent the discrimination. How
no,
could
I'm
a
not
tenant
saying
do
it
that?
On their own? Well, we have a city office of civil rights that enforces these laws that you're well aware of. You're working with them. There are dozens and dozens every year of fair housing cases brought against landlords for discrimination. I think all of us need to recognize we do have biases. And we do need to recognize them and be aware of them.
What's a bias of yours that you're aware of?
Well, I can imagine my family's Greek. If Zorba Afidopoulos came to rent from me, I might say, hey, Zorba, okay, maybe I'll put you at the head of the line. I can imagine thinking that. But I know for a fact that that would be discrimination on the basis of national origin or race or something like that. And I couldn't give Zorba that break under existing law.
Liz, would you acknowledge that there were perhaps unintended consequences of this now struck down law?
So we thought about the situation where a young person, maybe somebody with a lunch break, somebody like me who gets to work a 9-to-5 and has that privilege, possibly could see an open apartment and then be able to apply for it faster than somebody without internet access or somebody who possibly has to work, you know, 2 or 3 shifts. That is the unintended consequences I can think of.
Because this speed became important when you have to, when the apartment goes to the first qualified renter.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And so folks who don't have internet access, folks who don't understand how to use internet access, you know, your elderly folks, your disabled folks who may not be able to get to the library, that was the unintended consequence that we were thinking of and that we considered a lot about. Saying that there's discrimination and that it's okay for it to happen because what is the alternative is absolutely abhorrent to us as representatives of tenants. We are ourselves tenants. I am a tenant. And I think that if my landlord were to be standing in front of me saying that, oh, yes, discrimination happens, but, you know, trying to fix it is going to breed to some bad unintended consequences, that's just going to make me not want to rent in that place. But with such high rents and such low places for us to go, how are we supposed to, you know, find a place where a landlord is going to say discrimination is unacceptable, period?
Same question to you, Chris. I asked Liz about unintended consequences. How were landlords reacting, working around this law?
Well, for myself, what we did is we greatly increased our rental criteria. We moved our credit score minimum from 550 to 720. We just basically made it so that if we have to take the first person who meets those criteria are going to be incredibly high. But not so much for myself, but for other small rental property owners. But what we saw is people either selling their properties, removing them from the rental markets, turning them into VRBOs or Airbnbs, or just only doing rentals through word of mouth, you know, small group of friends and family, so it never hit the internet, never hit Craigslist. But one of the things I want to talk about, getting back to this unintended consequences thing, what I saw happening is that this law created this frenzy, almost like a game of musical chairs, where everyone wanted to be first. So, you know, applying for an apartment or a rental house costs money, 40, 50 bucks to apply. And what I saw is you would get a bunch of people applying, trying to be first before they maybe even saw the place. And then you go through the entire screening process and say, okay, you're approved. And oh, well, they applied for 5 other places. They've already picked someplace else. And then you're starting the process all over again. It just really mucked up what I thought was a bad rental market and making it worse.
Is that true, Liz, the frenzy?
Oh, that frenzy's always been there. The low vacancies and the incredibly runaway high rents here in Seattle and throughout the greater Seattle area has caused this frenzy for years and years. I mean, I came here in 2013 of August, and when I moved here, I thought I'd be able to move to Seattle. I got into Seattle University School of Law. I was all about to go to law school. But no, I ended up in Everett because that was the only piece of housing I could find. And luckily, they had one of those instant approvals where you could sign up right away, have your background checked right away, and then be in. It was, as the lawyers and as the judge says is a bad thing, a complete transaction. I signed up. I got it. I was the first one. I don't know a single tenant that is going to shop around and not put in applications in this housing market, regardless of the law. That is just the way it is. You find what you can get. And add a layer of implicit bias, classism, sexism, racism, and all the other issues that go unspoken here in Washington State, especially in Seattle, and you end up with a terrible housing situation, a dire housing situation, regardless of this law.
Well, this law has been struck down, so now what? Liz, what is it going to take to bring landlords and tenants together in a better way?
I mean, it's going to be hard. We're going to have to go back to step one, back to where we work with Housing Justice Project and try and find knowing cases of discrimination, which is always hard to find because landlords don't have to tell you why they're not going to rent to you. Landlords can just not rent to you. And then you have to prove that they're the racist, the sexist, the classist to be able to get into that home. And then
so you run stings? Is that the idea?
We could do stings.
So, hey,
we could come up with another idea, another law. We can work with Seattle City Council to come up with something else. But at the end of the day, if we have to compromise with landlords, they are going to make sure that their profit interest, their right to choose, and their right to commercial speech, commercial speech stands above the human right to shelter.
Chris, is there a better way?
Let's, again, look back to the one simple thing. No place else in the United States has a law anything like this.
And there's racism everywhere else in the nation.
And so what we found is that this particular approach, saying that the rental property owner or manager has no say whatsoever in who they rent to or how they engage and communicate, that idea is unconstitutional.
And that is disingenuous. You said yourself that you got to create the rental criteria. You got to up them. If the landlord has no right to manage the property, then how can you change your rental criteria?
The question is, must you take the first person who meets some numerical standards?
Must you meet the first person?
Can you use some discretion to determine what is the best fit for you, for the community, for the neighbors, for the other people in the building? I think the answer is going to remain yes.
And I think that once you hit the first qualified candidate of those qualifications that you create, you should let people have their shelter. These are roofs over people's head. This isn't a friendship with you. This isn't a chance to make the community better. This is a roof over people's heads. If people weren't so stressed out worrying about where they're going to live tomorrow, next month, next year, maybe they would have a chance to invest in their community. Maybe they would have a chance to become better. But no, we're too busy working around your rules, trying to find our right to shelter amidst all the profit interests that you and your lobbyists have created.
The CNA Apartments is a little six-unit building in the Inner Bay area of Magnolia.
This is your place?
Yeah. The tenants are, you know, young people tend to be artists, musicians, stuff like that. All I'm saying is the guy in Unit 1 who's a drummer in a rock band and, you know, that may not be the best fit for everybody.
Why?
Because people should recognize that that building has a vibe and a community, just like what was that movie Singles here in Seattle about the building where, you know, all the young people live.
That was precisely the argument for racial segregation, though. A lot of homes and housing projects were made after World War II, after the New Deal programs, to be able to house a certain type of person. What you are arguing for is a certain type of person. That is exactly the problem that we were trying to address with this law.
So the drummers,
should be able to drum where they want. There are supposed to be laws that are supposed to stop those noise problems. I thought you said that there are a lot of different ways to fix those issues. So I'm not necessarily understanding why a certain type of person has to be screened and deemed okay by only the landlord. Can't the neighbor say, oh, your drumming is too loud? Can't the neighbor say, oh, I saw you smoking when you weren't supposed to, so I'm going to call the landlord. I'm going to get you a 10-day. Can't we all work together? Or is
what,
it really your job to deem what a landlord what a neighborhood should be.
What you're advocating for is a one-size-fits-all solution where everybody has to fit the same set of rules. I'm saying I might want to offer a property that has a certain amount of flexibility about rules like noise or smoking or
whatever. And then you put that in your rental criteria. That's what you do. But instead, you change your rental criteria and then argue that you shouldn't even advertise it. You are being disingenuous here. You're saying that you won't have any single right to try and police the type of person that's in there when you just said earlier in this segment that you were able to raise your criteria, to raise the credit ratings.
No.
You were changing the type of person that's allowed in.
We're beginning to bring this to a close. But how do you want to respond to that, Chris?
It boils down to one simple thing. Who is in the best position to manage their property, recognizing that there are laws that prohibit discrimination, there are tons of laws that advocate for rental property owners and tenants trying to balance their rights.
Okay.
What this has determined, what happened a couple days ago, is the simple ruling that the city of Seattle can't dictate and take away the ultimate right of the property owner to select who they want to do business with.
Okay, like it or not, that was roughly the ruling from this judge. The city has said it's going to appeal We'll see whether that happens. We've been talking about Seattle's first-in-time law, stating that landlords had to rent to the first qualified applicant, with few exceptions. Yesterday, that law was struck down as a violation of the Washington State Constitution. And we've been talking about it with Chris Bennis, Rental Housing Association of Washington, Liz Dupuy, former executive director of the Tenants Union of Washington State. Thank you for this.
Thanks a lot.
And we'll continue with the record on KUOW in just a moment.